You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. Widely regarded as one of WB's most groundbreaking achievements in recent years, 2017's Wonder Woman was a landmark film that broke records and was celebrated throughout Hollywood. Now, with the release of Wonder Woman 1984, the Amazonian princess returns with less fanfare. Divisive from the moment of its release, WW84 sees Diana in the heart of the Me generation of the 1980s as she attempts to defeat the villainous Max Lord and Cheetah. This week, Screenfish returnees Deb Wonder Whalen and Gary Blaze stop by to talk about the film's depiction of greed, its understanding of truth, and why it has struggled to connect with audiences. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
About it, but a lot of people have feelings about it. Oh, Deb's got feelings. I see Deb has feelings.
I have more feelings than I know what to do with.
Oh, see, that's a pandemic. And So I'm very excited because I have feelings, but I feel like my feelings are not quite what other feelings are field. Or wait.
Okay, that's awesome. Keep that in.
I'll keep that in.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you feel, but I know what I feel. And I want to know if we know. I was going to say feel the same is better. I was going to say feel each other, but.
not at this distance.
Not at this distance. Yeah. It's Zoom. We're safe. Yeah. We'll burst into Sweet Caroline. Hands. Hands.
Just get to the bop, bop, bop part. We all know that's all anyone cares about in that song.
That's right. That's right. Oh, okay. What's going on, YouTubers? No. Welcome back, everybody, to Screenfish Radio. I am so glad you could join us today as we can finally delve into a film which has proven quite divisive and is up, and this is true, for every category at this year's Academy Awards.
Are you serious?
Oh yes. No, I'm not saying it's been nominated. I'm saying that their nomination strategy has been to make it eligible for every category in the Academy Awards. Now, some people read that online and felt their feelings because they thought it meant that it had been nominated for every category, which would be a staggering feat, really. I mean, for any film.
Especially for a superhero film.
Yeah. It really came in. It swept. It just went right across the board.
It beats like Schindler's List and Gone with the Wind.
When I think Schindler's List, the next film I think of similar to it is Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, same.
Very, very close. That is the film. Of course, we are talking about Wonder Woman 1984. And this week, I am thrilled to have, in the same room, the same digital room, the Whalen Blaze Corporation. You've now been incorporated. Gary Blaze, Deborah Wonder Whalen, together at last. So I'm glad that you two could join me to discuss this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We're happy to be here.
Anytime. And as always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, and I imagine there will be a few. For those that are uninitiated, Wonder Woman 1984 is the sequel to the highly successful first film, starring Gal Gadot as Diana Prince. And in this film takes place, of course, in the year 1984, when Diana Prince lives quietly among mortals in the vibrant, sleek 80s, an era of excess driven by the pursuit of having it all. Though she's come into her full powers, She maintains a low profile by curating ancient artifacts and only performing heroic acts incognito. But soon Diana will have to muster all of her strength, wisdom, and courage as she finds herself squaring off against Maxwell Lord and the Cheetah, a villainess who possesses superhuman strength and agility. So, Gary, Deb, what did you think of WW84?
How to answer? I thought a lot of things. The first thing that I need to say is that I am a huge Wonder Woman fan in general. Steve, you'll have to verify this, but like, I pulled out a bunch of my Wonder Woman comics.
Yes.
I'm wearing a Wonder Woman t-shirt.
I see. Yes.
I'm drinking from a Wonder Woman bottle. Like, we've got artwork around the house.
He's got a Decepticon t-shirt on. Should I mention
that's that? And we're hoping for that film down the road where
it's actually good.
The Transformers and Wonder Woman team up to defeat the Decepticons. It could happen.
Could be a thing.
Even if it's just like an action figure animation, that would be great. I might like it better than I liked Wonder Woman 84. I loved the first film. The first Wonder Woman film was hugely triumphant on a lot of levels. First of all, it was the first thing that DC has put out in quite a while in terms of live action films that was really satisfying to watch. I had my qualms with it, but for the most part, I loved it. And it was my number one favorite DC Universe movie until Shazam came out, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
So I was really looking forward to Wonder Woman 84. And I think in the end, part of my problem may actually be my fandom setting up my expectations. Because Maxwell Lord and Cheetah are like well-established villains in the comic book universe and in the animated universe. The film didn't actually do anything with those established characters. They took the names and kind of made up their stories almost from scratch. That was a conflict of interest for me. We can go into more of like my frustrations later, but I was expecting more than I got.
That's fair.
Essentially.
That's fair.
Gary?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
So for context, I liked the first one so much. You know, I had me and my homeboys, we had a guy's night, and we all went to the theater to watch Wonder Woman, the first one. We wanted to support it. We really liked it. For most of us, it was like the second time we saw it. We're all huge fans of the Wonder Woman cartoon. It's basically the origin story, the animated from like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Love the animated movie. I love her portrayal in the Justice League Unlimited series and those kind of things. But this movie, because it was almost, it would get so close. If it was just terrible and cheesy, it'd be fine. You can be in that mode. But it would do some really cool things and then do some terrible things and kept going back and forth. I think that's what, that jarringness is kind of what bothered me.
In the end, it kind of felt like one of the consistent problems was that I don't mind a reinvention of a character or a storyline or any of that kind of stuff. Like, that's obviously not a problem. It's just that when you already have so many storylines that have been written for you, rather than working off of those, if you choose to make up a new story, it needs to be good. It needs to be well established. It needs to be followed through, or you need to follow through on you know, all the details that you choose to include. And I felt like they spread themselves way too thin and couldn't actually come through on a lot of their own premises that they chose to set up. So, I mean, like, I'm still really fuzzy on the rules of the Wish Stone. Like, I understand that there is chaos that, you know, comes as a result of the need for a sacrifice from the Wisher. But I mean, the fact that we still don't really know who that big, evil, menacing god was that Diana was so scared of, but like they never fleshed that out. They never fleshed out who the god was and what the rules were around the whole premise. And so I was really disappointed in that. And even with like the two villains that we had, I felt like their characters were not satisfying, right? I love a good villain where you really understand their motivations and their motivations are well set up in the story. I love that. But I felt like they didn't do that with either Max Lord or Barbara Minerva, because what I saw was just two people falling into that 80s trope of, I can't be a loser. Being a loser is the worst thing in the world. Like, I need more from my villains, and I don't really feel like I got that.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that. See, this is where it has been so fascinating to see this film get thrown in the dumpster fire of 2020, because I really liked it. Now, it's not the greatest DC film. You know, if you were to rank them and all that stuff, like everybody's their power rankings, it would probably be middle, maybe even lower.
Okay.
But I know people that were just like, that was the worst experience of my life.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
I was pretty bummed after watching it for the second time last night. I was like, I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
But it's not Suicide Squad. It's not as bad as Suicide Squad or Batman.
I'm not kidding. I know it's people that think that was better. I've heard people say that was better. I don't know what
they're trolling.
That movie is a pile of human garbage. Like, it is actually that's not even just like, that's just objective fact. That movie is just terrible.
Yeah.
I'm a teenager. Wait, are we talking about Batman versus Superman Suicide Squad? Just to say, I'm a straight teenage girl from the 90s. I have never before not liked Jared Leto.
Oh, he's coming.
That movie destroyed Jared Leto for me. Problem.
Yeah, see, that movie was just, it was garbage up and down. They didn't even know what they were doing in that movie.
Yeah.
I think they went through 7 rewrites at the hand of the studio.
And they needed more.
We're going to go on there. But so, like, Wonder Woman 1984, it's flawed. I actually appreciate the intelligent argument that they didn't really follow through with the rules of the wishes. I don't really understand how this is supposed – not how it's supposed to work, but, like, what conditions there are, whatnot, just that bad things happen. My understanding is that they have written the treatment for number 3 while they did number 2. So if they haven't mentioned the God or gone into the God, it's possible that is a third piece that's giving the film a lot of grace. So they have not said that, they haven't indicated that, but I'm just saying, I know that she's already got a treatment for number 3, but I liked the throwback feel of the film. Like you said, it was like, it felt like 80s villains. I think the whole film felt like a 70s and 80s superhero film. I said to you before, when we spoke once before, I think that it's supposed to intentionally feel like the original series. And I grew up watching
the series from the 70s.
Yes. With Linda Carter.
As a fan of that series, I don't think they pulled it off. If that was the intention, I disagree.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Now, you make a good point though, Steve, about it being as if it's set in the 80s. So like the mall scene, totally. I think what didn't help though is after Stranger Things set such a bar for storytelling from that time period that maybe if Wonder Woman 84 came out before Stranger Things, I might have been more forgiving. But I think, Stranger Things, I admit, set such a bar for that style.
But I would say that Stranger Things is trying to tell a story in the 80s in today's style. I don't think...
Yes, I would agree with that. Yeah.
When I saw the fight in the mall, the first thought that went through my mind was, what am I watching? The effects are bad. And then I started to think back, like you look back at some, now I'm not saying that the effects are intentionally bad. That's not what I'm trying to say. That would be nonsense in a $200 million.
I would be pleased if that was the case.
But the way that they did their wire work and whatnot felt more akin to Chris Reeves' Superman movies. To me, now I'm not saying they're intentionally trying to make it look bad or whatnot, but there was a feel of her character that they leaned into so much more of the silliness For frig's sake, they have the invisible jet in this movie, for crying out loud. Now she can finally fly. She whips lightning with the, like, this is all stuff that may fit in some way, arguably, with the Zack Snyder introduction of Wonder Woman, but it's not the way that we tell superhero movies now. It's very whimsical. Whereas, you know, even though the MCU's been able to pull it off, it was a gradual pull. And I mean, I just had fun. Like, I just thought it was fun. I have no emotional ties to Max Lord or Cheetah whatsoever. I have not read the comics. I've had this conversation with about so many superhero products over the years. I had one about it today, about WandaVision. And it was just like, look, I haven't read the comic stories. And they're like, oh, well, if you'd read the comic stories, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why? I'm like, yeah, that's true. But this is the product that I was given. I don't have that. So I don't have that tie. The only time I've really, really been upset about a bad representation on film was anything in Batman and Robin pretty well, but really the initial presentation of Bane.
Yes.
Took this incredibly intelligent villain and made him a one word mumbling glory.
Wasting Tom Hardy.
Yeah, he's just a buffoon kind of strong man, right?
Yeah, I think he actually says at one point, bomb. And it's like, this is how bad it is. I was just like, I don't even know what I'm watching anymore.
What a waste of Tom Hardy.
That's not Tom Hardy. Oh, is it Tom Hardy?
Yeah. Yeah.
In 1998?
Oh, in the 1988 one. I forgot about that. Batman and Robin. I thought you referenced the one. Yes.
Not Dark Knight Rises.
Thank God.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Even though that was still
a Poison Ivy film. He's a goon to Poison Ivy.
And my post-traumatic stress disorder blanked out that movie.
My bad. Sorry, Gary.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's an insane, ridiculous thing. So, I mean, when it came to WW 84, I just sort of leaned into the silly, and I thought that it had a pretty good character story for what it was. And I mean, I hear what you're saying. And actually, you've made better points in this one conversation so far than anybody I've heard in the internet.
Well, maybe that's because that we know other people are going to listen and maybe get mad. So we want to do this respectfully. And again, because we actually do love these characters and we do love the whole universe that, you know, Wonder Woman finds herself in. We respect those characters. And so we expected more.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
What's interesting, like, rather than just hating everything, I will say one of the things that I really enjoyed / felt disappointed by in this film is Gal Gadot's performance. Yeah. I thought was beautiful. It was so emotionally, like, genuine and available. And also that I would say the same for Kristen Wiig. When I found out, you know, in like 2018 that Kristen Wiig was cast as the villain for Wonder Woman 84. I was surprised and then delighted immediately. And then when I found out that she was playing Cheetah, there was some disappointment because Cheetah is like the automatic kind of villain choice for Wonder Woman because she has to be fighting a girl. However, she's a very important villain in the Wonder Woman universe. So I got over it very quickly. Also, knowing that Kristen Wiig has a background in dance, I thought that she was when Sia's single Chandelier was out on the charts, it was nominated for a Grammy, and Kristen Wiig, and I can't remember her name, the girl who was in all of Sia's videos, the little girl who was the, you know, the little weirdo dancer, she performed at the Grammys with Kristen Wiig. They did a dance number to the song. It's worth looking up because it is like Kristen Wiig is so talented. And so I thought, oh, she's playing Cheetah. Like, they need someone who could embody that. And she'll do a great job. I didn't see that so much because I don't think they set her up to do it. They relied really heavily on CGI for all of the action scenes. However, Kristen Wiig's acting was so good. She did really well with what she had. And her chemistry with Gal Gadot was amazing. And I felt like they should have gone further with it. And I mean, they just had such a great foundation to build on. And like, who knows what they edited out of this film? And who knows whatever challenges or problems they had. But I did feel like there was a strength there. Yeah. And I wanted more.
Yeah. Well, see, that's also what you could argue is the two villain problem. I mean, it's very rare, very rare to see a film pull off two villains well. Mm-hmm. It happens. There are examples of it out there, but one of them invariably ends up becoming the sidekick to the other. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought, to me, Kristen Wiig was the highlight of the film. I thought she was wonderful. She ended up falling into that sidekick goon role for a guy who just really, you know, rubs his hands together so much, you know, it's like he's washing them constantly with the, you know, it sounds like Wario actually.
Brilliant mustache.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I agree. I think she was really good. I would love to hear from you both what you think of what they did with Chris Pine.
Oh yeah. So
because there were a lot of people angry about that as well.
So one of my complaints about a lot of superhero movies is multiple villains and multiple protagonists and this kind of stuff. We liked Shazam because it had the one dude as a villain, so fine. So I would have liked Kristen Wiig to be the entire bad guy, the entire movie, or Pedro Pascal, or even if they explored the morality of Chris Pine and not even have a villain, have Chris Pine, the morality of, like, you know, this, him existing in this body and stuff like that. And last night we watched it for the second time, and Wonder Woman raped this dude. Like, he didn't have the body to give consent. And he's literally getting raped. Like, and that's kind of not cool that it was like, if they touch on the morality of that, like her, like, and she's like, I feel bad doing this. We shouldn't do this. This is part of the truth. But we are hurting this guy's body. Mm-hmm. I would have been like, cool. That's awesome. Part of the story. She's like, I realize I'm cheating using this guy's body. I shouldn't cut corners. So when they separated at the end, it was emotional, but it wasn't enough. You know, it just was like, they kind of glossed over. And like, I know men being raped by women is no big deal in our society, but it's a thing. Like, you know, it's men have to have the right to give consent too. And that guy's body, he didn't have that choice. So yeah, emotionally that bugs me. And I think a lot of dudes, right?
And I think in the end, it was unnecessary for Chris Pine to be reincarnated in a body that was currently alive, right? Like, I don't know why, as part of the God's power that granted this wish, he couldn't just have been brought back corporally, right?
Like the wall or the missiles or the people's bags of money or the Lamborghinis or the farm, they all disappeared, came out of nothing. Why couldn't Chris Pine come out of nothing?
So yeah, I was not convinced that that was how that had to happen. Like that he needed to be reincarnated in someone who wasn't dead yet.
Yeah, you know what? I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, but you're right. I mean, I don't know why he couldn't just be alive without it. You've already leaned into the whimsy of the wish.
Yeah. Right.
And so why not go that one step further? I was glad in one sense that, you know, they didn't just make everything okay. Like at the end, mm-hmm. and there was that sacrifice at the end of the film. I thought that, okay, that was the whole reason for bringing him back was for her to make that decision. And I thought that was really good.
Honestly, and I thought that was good too. Like her wish you walked away was good.
Yeah. It was funny. While I was watching it, I never even considered the controversy while I was watching it. It just didn't even faze me. Like, I'm not saying that it's not an important conversation. I'm not. I'm just saying that when I watched it, it never occurred to me. It was like, there he is. It's a little weird, but okay. I never even – because I didn't know the guy. And
sure. You don't watch a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies?
I do, funnily enough.
I don't either, for the record. I think I just set myself up as a fan of something that I'm not. However, I hear that's where he's from.
Oh, I'm a fan of them, so that's fine because they're so awful.
There you go. So you did know him, you just didn't.
Oh, I yeah, maybe I didn't. It's interesting because Patty Jenkins just sort of, I'm looking it up here online. Somebody responded and she just retweeted and said, exactly. And the whole point of there is that they're trying to go with the body swap trope. So like something happened with that other guy and he ended up in Chris Pine's body, but isn't Chris Pine dead?
His body was obliterated in an explosion in the sky over Germany.
50 years prior.
and then the argument is, of course, when the wish was revoked, this is one of the things I think it's a male that's tweeting it. And then she just said exactly to it that because she revokes her wish that it never happened. So then the moment is just erased and she just says, see there, it's fine.
Ah, it's a magical roofie. Sweet.
That's all you need is a monkey paw. And
yeah.
But in all seriousness, like the controversy, this is one of those things where it just never occurred to me until after the fact. And then everybody was upset. And I'm like, okay, yes. No, I see that this is a conversation. I'm surprised that Jenkins wouldn't have seen that coming and addressed mm-hmm. it in the script in some way, shape, or form. The fact that they could have easily brought him back from the dead, I mean, that could have just solved the problem. And then he has to go. I don't know why they made that decision. That's interesting.
Yeah. They should have picked either. That's one of my points of the movie. Either do like say he comes out of nothing so you don't have to deal with this controversy, or lean heavy into it and like actually deal with
and address it.
Like have her maybe go, oh, I'm really hot for you. I love you, but we can't do this. Or him saying, I don't care. It doesn't matter. Like have it like a thing or ignore it. But the movie kept half-assing a lot. Like not just this one issue, but that's one of my complaints in general about the movie. Half-assed too much, you know.
We ended up discussing a lot of sort of issues, like, you know, one of us would be like, oh, why is this happening? And then the other one would provide what might be an explanation. And then we realized that we were doing that over and over again, and that this film actually requires a lot of work from the audience to fill in blanks that A, didn't need to be there, or that they could have answered for us, because I feel like good script writing doesn't leave so many holes or so much ambiguity. Like, and I feel like in Hollywood, you get a good film from, like, not to say that ambiguity can't be a good thing, but I just feel like they were spreading themselves so thin with, you know, so many villains and so much action. And so, you know, like, so rather than doing fewer things very well with fewer holes, there were lots of things that required a lot of faith or work from the audience in order to connect. And again, like, we got so much satisfaction out of the first Wonder Woman film that you expected to get that same satisfaction from this one. And you know what, like, power to the people who actually did get that satisfaction from this film, but I unfortunately wasn't one of them.
Yeah. See, you know, it's funny, like I see what you're saying, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention to some of these details. 'Cause for me, I just thought the chemistry between Gadot and Pine is still good. And I love the reversal of the first film, in the sense that in the first film, she's the inexperienced. I mean, she's powerful and strong, but she's the inexperienced one who has to be quote unquote guided. Although she has a lot of wisdom, she's guided along by Pine trying to make it in the man's work. Yeah. So this completely flips the trope, because he doesn't understand what parachute pants are. And the whole film is her explaining, like, this is funny. This is garbage. You know, like, these are things, like, they worked so hard to reverse that in a different way, because she's the confident woman now who understands the culture. She understands all the aspects. And I appreciate that. And one of the things I really liked is that this is one of the few superhero films in existence that ends without a punch being thrown. This is the only, there are only two superhero films that I am aware of that end without a fight. This one and Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange ends with a fight scene in reverse, but the real battle is with Dormammu, where they argue for the rest of time and catches him in a loop. And this does exactly the same thing. The fight scene with Cheetah, Which I thought she looked a lot better than Cats, by the way, just for letting it out. I thought
this, yeah, I looked a lot better than Cats. But did you think she looked good?
No, but I didn't think she had to. I didn't think she had to in this one, because they left the cheetah till one scene at the end in the dark. Like, I didn't think it had to be. It wasn't like she was standing in the spot, like, shining like the gold that you know, or anything like that. This is, I didn't think she had to. It was functional. It was a functional predator, as opposed to "look at me, I'm a kitty cat," which was what Cats was. But again, like, I don't have the ties, so like, I'm looking and I'm like, yeah, she was fine. Like, she did a fine job. But that was your final battle. The real climax is with Max Lord, and she's debating with him. The thing is fixed by the changing of a mind. And to me, that was like, this is wonderful. Because every superhero film ends the same, and that's who can punch the hardest.
Yeah, which gets annoying.
It gets annoying. If you have the tongue of angels but no love, you're the clanging cymbal. That's how I feel like a lot of superhero endings. They're just clanging cymbals and noisy gongs.
Oh, yeah. So the previous movie, when Wonder Woman meets up with Ares and they do the CGI battle, in the comic book, she uses words to convince him to stand down. In the George Perez run, which in this run, so that's her against Ares. There's a picture of Ares at the back.
Yeah.
She uses her words to talk him down. She doesn't fight him. And so after the first Wonder Woman, that was me and my super nerd friends. That was one of our complaints, that they shouldn't have the battle. They should have done the words to talk him down. And so the fact that they did it in this one that you're touching on is like a good thing. And like, I do want to see more of that, but it made, say, for example, the cheetah battles on the second viewing stand out all the more. Cause we were like, we were so tempted to fast forward it because the cheetah fight meant nothing. I wanted to see her use the words to talk down Maxwell Lord more. But yeah, I agree with you that it should be more of that in the superhero story. Cause I tried to tell my nephew, who's 13 now, the powers and strength is not what makes a superhero actually a hero. So I point out to him, the villains have such as much powers. The actual hero is someone who can like do the right thing. And sometimes that is just talking someone down. It's not necessarily punching them in the mouth, you know? So yeah, I'm on board with you with that is a good thing about the movie.
Well, I mean, like I said, like I've said to you already, like I see the film as flawed. Like there's some glaring flaws and holes in it. But there are things like that I thought set it apart.
Mm.
And like that moment there, and actually, ironically, the scene I liked less was when Lord goes with his kid at the end, because I thought they never earned the relationship between the father and son.
Agreed.
for me as a viewer, I'm like, yeah, you still, I don't know, man.
Yeah, and you're a dad, so you like, even then you're like, yeah, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah, something was still janky there, but. Or Jenkins there. No. Yeah.
Let's not blame her for that.
So one of the things that like, so with one thing with the Wonder Woman, with the superheroes, a big chunk of the audience went geeks and nerds. It's just, so like the thing with geeks and nerds, we'll pick apart details that like, maybe we shouldn't, but we do. So you touched on earlier, the wire work. So for me, the wire work, it did stand out as she felt too light on her feet and it was so obvious that the wire work was bad. And so I had to keep convincing myself to be in the moment. And as we were sitting here chatting, I realized if Wonder Woman, who eventually learns to fly, if she said in one sentence to Chris Pine something like, I noticed I'm a lot lighter on my feet, I think I might be able to learn how to fly, I would have been like, okay, that explains why the wire work is so terrible. Why she's so too light on her feet. But they never do. So it keeps always doing this cool stuff, but never doing enough to satisfy us geeks and nerds.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough follow through.
If it's like, oh, we're going to sneak into the Smithsonian, they got an experimental jet that is fueled right now, and it can actually fly all the way to Cairo, let's steal that. Sweet. But they didn't. So then all the nerds are picking apart how no fighter jet can get from North America to Egypt at all. It can't even get to Spain.
Okay, but that's kind of nitpicky. I'm not going to lie.
I will admit, nitpicky. But if you got a movie that's, the heavy audience is nitpickers, nerds and geeks that we do, you should kind of do a little more like, you know, so a good example would be
Mandalorian. I see what you're saying.
Like the difference between, say, Mandalorian versus the final three Star Wars movies. They're both in the same universe, but like the Mandalorian satisfied geeks and nerds as well as newcomers. And in the final three movies, the geeks and nerds were super frustrated. You know, and I think Wonder Woman did that. It frustrated the geeks and nerds without catching both audiences, where the first one caught both audiences.
No, I understand that. I would say that your argument about the ship that can fly to Cairo though, like, you know, they should have said, oh, they've got this new plane that can fly to Cairo. Like, that's the same sort of argument as saying, well, like, oh, we're in Star Wars and we're flying through space. And don't you love hearing the TIE fighters go, wah! Yeah, but there's no sound in space.
And I love that shit.
It should be like, that should be the sound of the TIE fighters.
But that's why everybody liked Firefly, because Firefly did that. Firefly knew how to pull that off and keep the silence in space and keep it exciting for us. And I think that also helps is like modern storytelling has compensated nerds and geeks wanting to do that. Battlestar Galactica also pulled it off. So in the 80s, I might not have been bothered so much by all of this. If I saw Wonder Woman 84 in 84, I probably would like it a lot more than I'm liking it now.
That would just be called Wonder Woman today. That's what it was. Wonder Woman now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so let's lean into the 80s here for a minute. Let's lean into the 80s. I would love to know what you think about the film and its portrayal of the 80s or the idea of greed, because I think that those are two ideas that sort of come out within the film, despite its flaws. We acknowledge the flaws, but just sort of how you felt about the portrayal of that era.
As someone who lived through the 80s, oh my God, yes. Because it was like you started seeing the excess greed, you know, Reaganomics. There's a reason that like the children from the 80s, when we hit a teenage in the 90s, we all came up with alternative rock and political rap. Because we, even as kids, saw that huge divide. The cyberpunk was invented in the 80s because of that divide of like the greed, the rich people.
Yeah.
They were so much more greedy than previous decades. And so I did appreciate that this show does talk about how, you know, greed is kind of bad and it gets out of control. And that is one of the things I did like about this, but I can't speak for Deb.
It's hard for me to. So I liked that. I thought that it really worked that they made Maxwell Lord an oil tycoon, because that was a very fitting sort of motivation or, you know, job or employment or pursuit that fit the 80s sort of world very well. And I thought that was believable. However that fits into, you know, one's expectations of who Maxwell Lord is supposed to be. And I do appreciate that they really leaned into that, like the power of positivity, because that I remember that kicking in. And so there was kind of like that, the new age references, and he was able to convince people to go along with him. Like when they were looking at him weird, cause he was touching them and using weird, like motivation, wish language, you know, all, like he needed certain words, but he was able to set it up in such a way that they bought it, because that was very prominent at the time, was the new agey power of positive thinking kind of thing. I thought that did work rather well. And what I liked about Barbara Minerva, despite that I feel like they leaned way too heavily on like the 80s nerd trope that like can't walk in heels, humbles her papers all the time, and the popped collar guy doesn't want to help her. I feel like that works a little better in a film about high schoolers. I love the popped collar, Steve. Very, very. Yeah. I always remember you as being that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what I'm known for.
But I still feel like there was, I mean, you almost saw that sort of the lack of feminism, except from Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was there to be like, she was just genuinely like a supportive woman, right? And she didn't have that, like there was no competition between them until, you know, the superpowers kicked in for Kristen Wiig and her motivation started to get more sinister.
We liked that they hit off a friendship. Yeah. I like all the actors. I think all the actors in this movie did a great mm-hmm. job. I'm happy with all of them. I will watch other movies by all of them. But yeah.
So I mean, just to say that there was some female empowerment stuff in there. That again, I wish they would have gone further with, because they started like you saw these two characters who were very different, right? Wonder Woman and Barbara Minerva. And you know, Diana is already empowered because she's been alive for hundreds of years and literally has, you know, supernatural powers. And you have this human person who doesn't even have the power of self-confidence. And she slowly grows, and, you know, feminism developing as it did in the 80s and whatnot. I feel like we saw at least a little bit of that, but like how you use your power as a female, we got to see a little bit of that at least. And so I'm happy they at least used it some, if not as much as I would have liked.
Because one thing I like about that is, because if the show is talking about greed, Minerva didn't want monetary. She wasn't greedy for money because mm-hmm. she had a decent job. She was greedy for attention, like male attention and that kind of stuff. So I like that the movie touched on greed is not just monetary. It can also be that society status, etc. Even Wonder Woman, she was greedy because she wanted love sure. instead of letting. Because the movie kind of implied that, or at least hinted that Steve Trevor was in heaven. Because he talked about how he doesn't remember everything, but he remembers it being a good place. You're like, so you literally ripped someone you love out of paradise for your own selfish greed. I thought that was great. I thought that
and
was
it
like
was Buffy all over again.
Yeah, it was like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. So I did like that the movie touched on greed is like, you know, Maxwell, he had unconditional love from his son, but he wanted the love and respect from all these random strangers because he was greedy for the number of strangers loving him and respecting him instead of like having the respect and love of his son, which he already had. So yeah, this is one of the things I did like about the movie is that the talking about greed and how it's actually a bad thing and you might have everything you want around you, but you might be blind to it. I thought it was like pretty dope. Mm. You know, because Minerva, she just made a friendship in Wonder Woman. And yet part of her thing was, I want to be confident like Wonder Woman. But you already have a friendship developing. Why would you ruin it for more greed, you know? So yeah, I thought that was a good thing in this movie.
Well, I think Pedro Pascal actually says, Maxwell Lord says at one point, what is there to wish for than more?
Yeah.
And I thought that's a good line.
Yeah.
I, of course, have no memories of the 80s because I was born in 1997. So, I mean, you know.
Oh, wow.
How many times?
20 times. No, honestly, like I thought they managed to portray the era itself very well. But that's one of the things I liked about it. See, I think maybe for me, and again, like I fully acknowledge that there's a lot of things that are worth not liking about this movie. I really do. But I liked the feel of it. And I liked the way they portrayed the era far better than I did the way that Captain Marvel portrayed the 90s. And it's not like,
oh my God, yes. 100% agree.
And it's not like I hated that movie, but like between the two of them, I'm like, okay, you know, that's fine.
yeah. Oh my God, like Captain Marvel, for example, felt like it was trying too hard to be the 90s, but forgetting all the important stuff in the 90s, like the freaking race riots that were happening all over the place.
I feel like Captain Marvel would have had something to say.
Yeah, the gay rights movements, you know, like that were happening in the 90s, they didn't touch on any of that.
Yeah,
at least the woman more touched on trying to be in the 80s. Then, no.
I felt like Wonder Woman set itself in the 80s and let it address issues, address the feel of an era rather than, like you said, trying really hard to feel like the 80s. Like, there's 80s stuff. Right. There's 80s stuff there. And I remember the way the mall looked. I'm like, yep, remember all that. I would have been 7 when this movie came out or when this movie was set, right? And I was like, okay, I remember this era. But what they addressed was the soul of an era with this idea of the me generation in its overarching thing. And that's one of the things I thought they did really, really well. And I like what you said there, Gary, because I think the theme of what does greed look like, it doesn't have to be money, money, money. Although even the fact, like, and when I saw the trailer, and I know it's a big thing in the comics and all that stuff, when I saw the golden armor, I thought, good Lord, that looks ridiculous.
yeah, it looks way better being drawn.
Yeah. But in the context of the film, like, the villain is essentially a King Midas character. And the whole color palette of the film is a gold-bathed color. Everything is sort of a yellowy tone. And I really felt like that sort of look was like, okay, that fits very much into the I want more, but there's something I'm missing.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that, and I'm really glad you pointed it out. And what it brings to mind too is that a lot of stuff ends up looking tarnished, which just plays into that even more. So that's actually really astute and really useful.
I'm astute. Oh,
well, Zina.
Pop my collar and move on. No, I'm kidding. But no, I mean, like, that to me, I thought that there was something really interesting about that idea. And going back to the finale again, and again, there's no way that if this came out in a year earlier that I would have made this connection. I admit it. This is 2020 life. pandemic.
Deep insight.
Filtering the way I view this film. But one of the things that I really liked was the finale, this idea that, hey, guess what, everyone? We all need to sacrifice to fix this situation. We have created our own demise, and we all need to work together by giving up some things that we really want right now in order to fix it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was just like, bam, 2020, pandemic life, you know, split. Like, that's why when I saw it, I was like, this is actually a really appropriate message that fits where we're at now. Were they prepping that at the time? No, I don't know why. It probably was, hey, you know what, I grew up in the 80s, I remember the 80s, let's do the 80s, and I've got right. this idea. But to me that's one of the things that made it work, is this idea of greed being just it, whether it's your ex-boyfriend who blew up in an airplane, or, you know, just being better looking, like Minerva, or even like some, like the wild things that, you know, what was the one, I wish you were dead, and then the guy dies right in front of her, and then like stuff like that. This is wild stuff. But this idea that maybe there's some element of sacrifice, personal sacrifice, that actually is required of all of us.
Yeah.
I thought was actually a really valuable, really valuable shade to the film. So I mean, that was something I just found really attractive about it personally.
Yeah, agreed.
I do find it very confusing. I will say this. I mentioned to you guys before a little bit, but I find their conversation about truth to be completely confusing.
Me.
And that's one of my complaints.
They talk about truth a lot in this movie. I'm not sure if they know what it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure they know. Because we touched on last night, the truth and greed are not the same thing, because it could be true, like someone wished that their child doesn't have cancer. Or someone could be wishing that their parent doesn't have a flu or something. They're not going to undo that wish. And it's still true. They really don't want their child to die of cancer, for example. Because there's like, I forget how many people were on the planet at the time. There's like, what, 5 billion people on Earth in the 80s? Something like that. Because we're at like 7 or 8 now. So like, in all the billions of people, there's going to be people making good wishes too, under their truth, right? So the fact that the movie didn't pick truth, it should have stuck with greed rather than truth. Would have been better. Or if it did truth, it should have like super played on the like mass media manipulations. It should have played on that.
I love that aspect of it, actually. There was that cool element of Maxwell Lord with the media.
Yeah.
That they don't really delve into it, but I thought that was really kind of cool.
And they should have delved into it more.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was cool. And especially us, from what we're experiencing now, we're like, oh man, we were so naive back then. We had no idea.
Well, and they bring it up very early, this whole idea of truth. So in that opening sequence where we see Diana as a child, and, you know, she uses that somehow well-developed bobsled track in the hill to get ahead.
We were like, why is this so immaculate?
Lucky egg, is that what it goes back
to? Yeah, exactly.
Well, Gary called it a bobsled track at one point, and I immediately jumped in. Themis Gira, we got a bobsled team. Anyway, so we had some enjoyment from that. But you know, she gets to the end of the race, except that, you know, Antiope knows what happened and, you know, grabs her and stops her from crossing the finish line. And Antiope says to Diana, I've written it down, truth is all there is. No true hero is born from lies. And I wish they had done a better job of supporting that through the rest of the film. Cause I don't really feel like they did a strong enough job.
Yeah. I agree with you on that because I feel like they mentioned truth a lot within this film. It just keeps coming up. The truth is what powers it, not me. The truth is bigger than all of us.
Yeah.
What lies have to do with granting wishes? And I'll be honest, I just feel like they picked the wrong word.
Exactly.
Mm. It would be. But like that conversation at the opening scene, which for some reason Warner Brothers wanted to cut. I have no idea why they wanted to cut the Themyscira scene, but it makes no sense to me.
Well, I feel like the movie could have existed without it.
It could
have. And it was 2.5 hours long. So if I was going to cut something, that's probably what I would have went with too. I'm with Warner Brothers on that one.
Touché. Touché. Good point. but I mean, like that conversation at the end, she's like, I won. No, you didn't win. And that's the truth. And I thought, well, yes. But is that the lesson? Like,
right?
I wasn't sure. I mean, I guess it kind of is, but if that's the lesson, I think they try to fit it in awkwardly in the final speech with yeah. Max Lord.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like it just doesn't, like the word doesn't work in the context of the film. Even if they had talked about in that battle, they could have said, you know, they could have said it's true that you came in first, but it is selfish based on how you accomplished or something and spun it back to that overall theme.
Yes.
Because it feels like an A theme with a B plot.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Good way of putting it.
You want to talk about truth? Let's talk about truth. But I don't think this movie's talking about truth the same way that they think that they are.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it felt like the setup, if that opening scene was supposed to be the setup for that premise that was wishy-washily followed through with. Yeah. I actually disagree that they set it up well at all, because the thing was that, like, I thought little Diana was super resourceful in getting herself back on track, right? She fell off a horse. She wasn't trying to harm somebody else or cheat to get ahead. She fell off her horse and was like, crap, what am I supposed to do now? And realize that there was a means of her getting back, literally getting back on her horse and you know, continuing with the race. And so I feel like resourcefulness should be rewarded because I didn't feel like it was actually cheating.
That actually would have been a good morality to put it in the film. People debating the truth, like, could have had two characters disagree, like someone have a point of view, someone have a tire piece point of view. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Steve very wisely pointed his finger at Gary to show how much he agreed.
I did. Let the audio listeners hear that I pointed in agreement.
Visualize it in your mind, and then you can have it too.
Steve pointed.
Nice to them.
There should be a gif of Steve going like this into the camera right now. But you know, again, maybe that comes back down to there's just the wrong word. Mm-hmm. Because you know what might have been a better, when you were talking there, Deb, this is what went through my mind is you're right. She was resourceful, but she did break rules. I'm not saying that she did. Yes. I'm not like the cheating was that she was supposed to maintain on the track. So she cut a corner to get there. They could have easily tied it in if they focused in on that and said something to the effect of, like, there are certain rules and ways that life operates and we have to abide by them. And that would actually lean into the wishes idea. Like,
yes,
Chris Pine, I'm sorry, Steve Trevor, you died. I have to let you go. There is a rule of death.
Yeah.
You could have done it that way, but instead they made it, like, it's just so awkwardly put. And
yeah.
Which to me is a shame because, like I said, I really bought into the greed theme. I thought, man, this is something I haven't seen in a superhero film in a while, other than somebody who just wants all the power, like in the first film, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, but there's an interesting subtext there. So that was one of the things I actually gave the film so much credit for, because I was like, this is a different topic that we're getting. This is something unique. But yeah, that is the idea of what, how the truth affects it. I get what they were trying to do, but it just didn't, they did not do it well.
Because one of the things with the truth where they're not doing it well is, because again, there's a lot of geeks and nerds gravitate towards comics. So they'll notice things like, if this movie is about truth, they'll start noticing the lies in the storytelling. So as a random one of example, they go into the video game arcade and it's set in 1984. And the two video games you see were made in 1986 and 1987.
Come on.
And like,
sorry, that's another nerdy nitpick.
So it's a very nerdy nitpick, but the movie's about truth. But the truth is those video games, Rampage and Operation Wolf, didn't exist in 1984. So that's one of the things. Is like, if you're going to lean into this is truth and you got a lot of geeks and nerds watching, we will start noticing the lies that are done to like to manipulate the emotions, you know, because that's one thing that helped with Deb and I when we first watched it. The movie kept like stalling a lot. So all the emotional stuff didn't pull us in as much as it would have if we sat through it in one sitting, I think. Because like it'd be halfway through an emotional scene and it would stop as it was buffering. And then we got to think about it and go, wait a second.
There's an emotional scene and the little thing starts.
And the thing shows, yeah. But then we got to like analyze before we moved on to the next emotional scene. We got to go, wait a second. I'm pretty sure I played Operation Wolf. That didn't exist in that time. Or, you know, like the sexual assault aspect. You know, it starts kicking in. And you're like, wait, why did his watch flinch and move when the wish came true? He's nowhere near his watch. He was in the other guy's body. Why did that move? That makes no sense. That shit started kicking in.
With the exception of the goodbye scene, I was so much more emotional for it the first time.
Yeah.
I like the goodbye scene too.
Yeah,
I
thought it was really well done. Even the second time, I still teared up. I think that says more about the chemistry between Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. They are so good together. And you could tell, like, their genuine performances were just so strong. And so no matter what flaws and, you know, harm kind of were a result of them being there in the way the story was told, the two of them parting, no matter how many times your Wi-Fi stalls your movie, or how many times you see this movie and how many flaws you see there, it's emotional and it's good. And it was very genuine and it was true.
I keep on using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. You know, I think that's absolutely fair. And I will say this about their relationship too. And this is what they are, such a wonderful pairing, because they're one of the only superhero couples where one of them doesn't fade into the background. And
yes,
they both humbly lift the other person up at different times. One doesn't rescue the other in either film. They both save each other in different ways in both films. And see, this is the stuff that I connected with, right? I feel bad for Joe Schmo who got vaporized, and I can only imagine where he go, like, where am I?
Yeah, am I in purgatory? Am I in hell?
He ended up in someone else. It was a whole thing. Fabric of the universe.
End of the day, we know he was fine because he showed up in the random Christmas scene they inserted at the end.
It's a Christmas film.
It started on the 4th of July because fireworks and all that, and then all said and done, it was Christmas. Hooray for Christmas.
Oh, my word. Now, you see, what would have been creepy is if she asked him out at the end. That would have been...
Wait, she'd been like, you want to go for coffee? I've seen your penis already. He'd be like, wait, what? He faces her or something.
Better yet, she goes over to his house and he's like, oh, can I get you something? Don't worry, I know where everything is.
Know where everything is? Yeah.
I want to wear the yellow shirt.
He'd be like, what the heck? What's going on?
I mean, let's hoping that Wonder Woman 3, we see a little bit more of that relationship.
I hope in Wonder Woman 3, Chris Pine comes back in Wonder Woman's body, and they just totally.
Yes.
Wonder Man.
He has to let himself go. Like, I don't know how that works.
He'd look really, really good in that outfit.
Man, that would, wow. Let's reel it in from that. And
wow.
On the characters getting along, I said to Deb, I wish Eddie Candy was also brought back, because yeah. I like her character in general. In the comics, I like her character. I liked her in the first movie. And I get why Wonder Woman is in love. So that's why she calls for Chris Pine. But Eddie Candy's also her best friend for at least 3-4 decades, because it shows a picture of them in the 50s. Hanging out.
Yeah, at the very beginning when you see her apartment for the first time, there's a shot of a photograph of Diana with Etta Candy in the 50s, and Etta Candy is a very old woman, and Diana Prince looks the same, just in 50s attire.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
So I wish that she had been brought back too, and because I pointed out to Deb, I was like, you know, Wonder Woman was with Chris Pine for about a month, 50 years prior to this movie, but she's with Etta Candy for a couple of decades. And I said, Deb, who would you bring back first? Your best friend? And I named a couple of her best friends. Or a dude you made out with for a month? She's like, yeah, I'll bring my best
friend. I chose my best friend. Not to answer. But
dude, it's Chris Pine. Like, yeah. I mean,
and I love him, and I think he's awesome.
That's not a big enough motivation for me.
So I think they could have brought back both, because I would have liked both. Because I liked... In both movies, I love all the actors they bring. I love all of them.
They're just totally confusing the plot. Like, what?
Yeah, how
really good at that. We were actually talking about how they should have brought Bones and Booth in, because the Smithsonian. And I mean, it just could have lent a lot of credibility.
Yeah. And then if they bring in Booth, you know, because he's a vampire, they could have brought in Buffy of the cast.
You guys didn't pick it up. They were all in there. They were all in that guy. And
yeah, if you want to do a podcast episode on all the different ways we can bring other characters and connect all the different movies and TV shows, we're the ones. Yeah, we're the ones you want on that episode.
That's it. Yeah. I'm so excited. That has to be a thing sometime. Oh,
crazy tirades and tangents. Whalen Blaze style.
Oh, my goodness.
I have one major bone to pick. So the invisible jet thing.
Wouldn't have made that sound.
Yeah.
So there are a number of things that I have questions about, but my major problem with how they made the plane invisible was that she makes a reference to her father. My father created Themyscira and turned it invisible to hide it from the world. At what point did they explain who her father was in the first film? Because when the only time I remember her referencing her father in the first film was when she said she had no father, she was formed from clay and brought to life by Zeus.
I thought she was Zeus's daughter.
And she is, but when did they explain that?
I'd have to go back and watch it again. See, when she said that, I just thought that that was made explicit in the previous film, that she was Zeus's daughter. Unless, we're making excuses for the film, but if she's made of clay and made human by Zeus, is that a form of paternal creation?
Right. It was a big enough thing that I just thought it was a careless throw in. And I actually thought it could have been a really great big reveal, because it's an important part of who Diana is. Mm. And again, you know what, if you're a comic book reader, then you like that does come to light.
This isn't Reed Fish.
The relationship. Yep. Okay. I have lots more that I can bring up, but I know that people hate me already, so that's enough for them to hate me for.
I have one last complaint.
Complaint fish.
So Wonder Woman, she, you know, you see her, like, she's like, hey, I think I can fly, because Chris Pine kind of describes to her how she can fly. So she thinks about it, and she does the cool, she does the jumps. I was like, okay, that's awesome. She's thinking about how she can fly. Sweet, she's flying. I was like, okay, yay, she's flying. And then she decides to do Spider-Man whips along the lightning. It's like, but you've already established you can fly. Because the first time I watched it, I thought I mixed, my memory had mixed those two around in sequence. I was like, okay, she can't fly yet, so she does the Spider-Man web swing from the lightning. And then when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh, she lets her fly because she's going to find Maxwell. So she flies. And then when she gets closer to him, well, the lightning's happening. So she decides to web swing from the lightning. And I was like, what, why? And I said to Deb, it's one of the things that frustrates me about the movie. It keeps pulling me out because you're like, she's flying. No, wait, now she has a web swing. What? Why? I was like, oh. So it's like, stop. I wish the movie would stop pulling me out. It's because I'm trying to get drawn in. You know, like, funny, like, so Wonder Woman flying, hitting bullets with her braces is way more realistic than, like, Middle East parents letting the kids play on the road when there's a convoy, an army convoy coming towards them. And the kids are, like, playing soccer on the road. That's the most unrealistic part of a movie about a woman who could fly and is supernatural.
Don't judge her. Don't judge her and her parenting abilities.
Okay? It's like, Melissa, mom, what are you doing?
The ground was closed because of the pandemic. She had to play on the street. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
You're like, for mental health and wellness, man. The lengths we need to go to, it's true.
So I have a feeling this movie would be one of those movies if they gave another script rewrite, like just a touch-up.
Right.
Or if they got, like... You know, maybe Patty Jenkins is a good director, but like George Lucas, she's not a good writer. You know, George Lucas kind of sucks at writing, but he's great at directing.
I mean, this is really her third film, my understanding. Like, the second one was Wonder Woman. The first one was Monster.
Which, right. Yeah, it was.
But did she write that one?
I don't know. I know she directed. I don't know if she wrote it.
I have no qualms with her directing.
Yeah.
So my major thing with this film was the writing. Right. Although I do, I'm actually given a lot of hope by what you said at the beginning, in that this movie was written with the treatment of the expectation that there was a third one coming. So I'm hoping that we see what we saw in the Pitch Perfect series. The first one reels you in. The second one is terrible, but the third one's actually pretty good. So if we get some redemption in a third Wonder Woman, and I will see it regardless, like I'm in, so I will see it. But
I really hope they bring back Kristen Wiig for the third. I liked Kristen Wiig.
There's been talk about bringing her back for the third one as well. But again, that's really all I've heard, is that there was a treatment already, and that Kristen Wiig was discussed as potentially being a part of that.
I hope so. She deserves more.
Yeah, she deserves more than
for like. In the role, I think we could do. I expected more. I want more. Give me more. I'll take it.
Well, I like this movie. I wish it was either just Kristen Wiig or just Maxwell Lord.
No, I agree.
Both kind of annoys me. You know,
I agree. But this is what happens: is you're only doing a few movies, so you know what fans want. They want this guy and this person and this woman, and so how many? And it's like, okay, well, slow your roll. Like,
yeah, slow your roll.
You actually invest in people.
Because one of the reasons that happens in the comic book world, the reason that happens is because we might read like a year or two worth of whatever hero against, and then a month or two of whatever villain, and another month or two of whatever villain. And then like a couple of years later, they have all of them show up at the same time. It's super mind-blowing. So like Spider-Man always has one villain at a time. And then when he had the Sinister Six, us comic readers were like, oh my God. But the movies keep trying to do it too soon.
Yeah,
they're like already trying to throw too many villains at a time instead of like, slowly, one villain at a time, one villain, and then have like the fifth movie, all of a sudden they all team up, and you're like, oh crap, how is our hero going to survive? Because he barely beats each one of them individually.
Well, that is something that Marvel does really well. I'm not going to throw up DC versus Marvel films in that. But what they do really well is, because they know they're going to have 400 different films, they'll have this person show up in a film, and it's like, don't worry. I think even Thanos didn't get a role for 5 movies after his first appearance, and it's like, yeah, we're thinking that far ahead, but
yeah.
Well, remember that person that was way back there? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to put them in here, and DC has not been able to do that well. Yeah. So they fall into the old trope of, you know, it'd be great as if we had 2 villains or
whatnot. Yeah.
And it doesn't, I mean, I like, it just, it can work. It's so rare when it does, when you can mention it. I think the next one is called Wonder Woman 1985, and she goes back in time 30 years to make sure her parents get together.
Nice.
And Chris Pine is there. But it hasn't happened yet. No, anyway. Well, to you both, we have looked at this from every conceivable angle. Let's skip it. Wonder Woman 1984, screen it or skip it.
Ooh.
Throw it in the fire if you want.
It's hard because I don't hate it the way I hated Suicide Squad or Batman vs. Superman, but I don't love it the way I love Shazam or Aquaman. So I'm like, kind of halfway.
I would say be informed, screen it, because it's good. It could be better.
You just said it was good.
I was trying to invoke the Maxwell Lord phrase.
Oh, I didn't do a good enough job.
I'm like, spin it so you can see how bad it is.
Yeah, I would still say screen with caution. Yeah, screen it, but with caution.
It's not Basic Instinct. Like, make it, put a little asterisk on it.
Yeah.
You can be cautious of a lot of things.
I will say, I still say screen it because I had fun. I acknowledge you probably have to temper your expectations because, and I didn't say this before, like, because you said it really well. The first one is great and one of those standalone landmark superhero films, not just because first really good female led film. She's not actually the first female superhero film. She's the first good one. And it really is a remarkable, it's just a blast. But this goes a different direction. And if you're looking for Wonder Woman 2, you're not going to get it. And you're going to get Wonder Woman 1984, which is totally different. And I think, I really think you can have fun with it, but I understand now the reasons why. And I agree with a lot of the things. I just enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, it was something like Suicide Squad. I couldn't even enjoy.
No, yeah.
I can enjoy bad movies. I really did not enjoy it. Like there are films that are just agonizing to watch. That's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you get a chance to watch the Suicide Squad animated feature, that's really good.
That one is good.
Yeah,
you get the point. Here's a few points into the screen for you, Gary.
Points are happening.
Let's go points. Point.
We're going to have to edit in some sound effects to ting, ting every time there's a point.
Sure, just like TIE Fighters in space, right? Because that's
exactly. Exactly.
Deb, Gary, thank you so much.
Thanks for putting up with our nitpicking.
Yeah. Sorry, we're such nerds and geeks.
And thanks for having us, even though we're nitpickers.
You can pick nits whenever you like.
Thank you.
And for you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. And if you go to the podcast page at screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which contains small group questions that you can have with people that you see the film with as well to get the conversation started. And there will be things to talk about after you've seen WW84. So there's lots to talk about. So again, thank you so much to you both. I love chatting with you and for you at
likewise.
Home. Yeah. Love it. I don't know why I said it like that. Yeah. That sounded, that sounded really lame.
Because I tugged your heartstrings.
And it popped my collar. And so
eat it.
We started the conversation. This was Screenfish.